Hey, good morning, gardeners. Hopefully, we're not all just still suffering the after effects of overeating. I hope you all had a safe and happy Thanksgiving. Going to be a kind of a slow day. You know, the weather is going to be a little hot and muggy, but then we're going to break again tomorrow. So still outside weather, still a good opportunity to get out in the garden, get some things done, check out what's going on. Temperatures are driving us a little crazy. 80 degrees at this time of the year isn't the best. It would be nice if we were in that cooler break, but that looks like that's coming tomorrow. All of this going on, we have, today is the last day of November. That means we're 21 days away from the days starting to grow longer again. It's about time. Tired of this dark at 5:30 at night. But three more weeks, we're going to be back to the days starting to stretch out and the garden will be going crazy again. Hopefully, you're not seeing any pests. The temperatures going back and forth is a little strange. It makes it a little hard to decide, you know, whether the bugs are going to go dormant or whether they're still hanging around, what we should be doing about them. For the most part, the pests that we're going to see in our garden at this time of the year are going to be fairly insignificant. Some caterpillars are not uncommon, but they're usually pretty easy to deal with. We probably won't be seeing many beetles. They're not a big deal. None of the hard shell bugs, leaf-footed bugs, the stink bugs. So we're kind of in a nice period of time here. Now, the warmer temperatures, they do introduce a little problem because the diseases will still be active. We're usually, when experiencing cooler weather, outside of the temperature ranges of the diseases. You know, this is kind of easy to see. If you happen to have a swimming pool, you will see in the spring, like you could clean your pool before the end of the year and the water's still pretty clear and things like that. And you go through the winter and then all of a sudden there's a day where it goes from kind of clear water to pea green soup. Just seems like overnight. That's because we get into the temperature range where the algaes, the diseases, etc., thrive, and they just bloom. Well, we get the same thing in the garden. Whether it's, you know, powdery mildew, it doesn't matter. There'll be a period where, as long as we have these warmer temperatures, these diseases will be truly active, and we've got to pay attention to it. Hopefully, we will get the break. Hopefully, we will get the break in the weather that will cool us off enough that those diseases go dormant too. That was something else that we wouldn't have to deal with, and that makes for an easy time in the garden. Let's go to the phones. This is Matt. Good morning, Matt. What can I help you with?
Good morning. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Want to know, when do I begin spraying my peach trees? And regarding, I have Actinovate, and there's another trade name, but when do I start spraying them?
For using that product, you're going to wait till you start to see the buds show color.
Okay.
And you're going to spray about once a week from the time you start seeing it show color until the blooms come off.
Okay. Should I spray neem oil right now or wait with all the leaves drop?
If you still have leaves on it, yes, it's okay to wait until it goes fully dormant. So you've got plenty of time. We may be talking January here, but neem's a good choice, and you want to wet everything good with it, but you can hold out a while. Let's let it go completely dormant on you and all the leaves fall off, but it would be neem, and then when you see the buds start to show you color, when it's getting ready to bloom, you can start spraying with the Actinovate to prevent the fire blight, the brown rot, all of those diseases.
Okay, there was a commercial product that was the same thing. Was it, I forget the name of it, Safer or something. You remember that?
I don't know about a commercial product replacement for Actinovate. That's kind of a owned product.
it was a different name, but it was the same thing. I don't remember. But anyway, okay, well, I've got Actinovate, so I'm good. Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, folks, that's something worth considering here. Dormancy is when the leaves are gone. It means that the plant is as slow a growth period as it's probably going to get in this weather. That is a great time to do maintenance to trees. In terms of your fruit trees, when we're good and cold and fully dormant, we still go along with the idea that we will spray a dormant oil, whether that's neem, which is effective, or something like organicide or the literal dormant oil labeled oils. The idea is that you are going to spray every bit of your tree and it's going to soak into the bark and it is going to suffocate eggs from pests that may have laid eggs in the bark. You have one issue with this. When you use an oil, you have to make sure that you do not use sulfur-based products for 30 days after the oil. So if I spray something that's sulfur-based, I got to wait 30 days before I use the oil. If I spray an oil, I got to wait 30 days before I use the sulfur-based. The two products, when used together, they can create a chemical reaction that will burn the tree. Not a fire-type burn, but a burn where it can damage the tissue of the tree. So separate the two by at least 30 days. Now, that's usually not a big deal anymore. We don't tend to use a lot of sulfur. We have other products now that are better, like the Actinovate. Monterey's got one with a bacteria in it that works really well at disease prevention. But if you are still going to be doing that, if you're still going to use a sulfur base, remember, I have to have 30 days between oil and sulfur because it can cause some wounding and damaging to the tree, and you don't want that to happen, of course. But we still do the oil sprays, the dormant spraying of trees. There's a little data out there that we're starting to see where it's like, are we harming more beneficial insects than we are detrimental insects? Are we actually doing the tree any good in our area? So far, it's still considered a positive. So as soon as we get a good cold snap, the tree's truly dormant, the leaves have all fallen off, peaches, plums, apples, they are something you would consider spraying with a dormant oil. Folks, we're coming up on the first break. This is Gardening Naturally. Give me a call. The number's 512-836-0590. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Let's go to the phone lines. This is Richard. Good morning, Richard. What can I help you with?
Yeah, about 19 years ago, after watching a PBS fundraiser with a host of Jerry Baker, I got one of his books, and looking through it recently, I was wondering, is there any worth to his creations to spray on the yard and plant? What's your opinion of that?
There are. Most of it is based on observation, but there is some good science behind it. He was a fan of using beer, for example. Well, beer has carbohydrates and sugars in it, and those are both products that improve the soil biology, so that would improve the plants. I'm not a fan of his taking a big old chunk of Red Man, putting it in a jar with a liquid and letting it set for a month and then using that as a spray. That they're using the nicotine in the product as a pesticide, and it works really well. Nicotine is an incredible poison, but it does affect people too. So that would be one I'd be a little concerned with. But most of the other things that he did were, I would say, I don't know that every single one of them was positive, but I don't know of any of them that would have a negative impact.
All right then, thank you much.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, Jerry Baker was a leading early gardener. Some of his things you would think were actually just borderline crazy, and that he woke up in the middle of the night and wrote something down real quick, and the next day he suddenly had this gardening topic. But a lot of the things that he did were based on observations that, hey, this got better. And it was later that we found out the why things got better. So, yeah, most of those are good. Not a fan of the using the nicotine one, though. That is a pretty nasty product, so you want to be careful of that. Let's go to, this is Gordon. Good morning, Gordon. What can I help you with?
Good morning, Jeff. Say I planted some poppy seeds last week. My timing was good, I think, because we've had some light rains and whatnot. And I'm just wondering, is there any benefit to cover that bed now with, I've got some white oak leaves. Would that be of any benefit to keeping the seeds from washing out or...
Well, yes, it could help in the fact that if we got harder rain than we have, the rain wouldn't splash the seeds all over. That, so it is a protection that way. And it'll also keep that soil continuously moist with because the leaves will act as a barrier and keep the moisture in. And that's what they need right now to germinate. So absolutely nothing wrong with putting a layer of leaves over the top of that bed. That would be a positive for it. Now, you could run over them with the lawnmower first. Nothing wrong with using them straight off the ground. Nothing at all. But if I break them down a little more and make a finer mulch out of it, for one, they'll break down faster and feed that soil faster, which the plants, of course, would appreciate too. But no, absolutely nothing at all. If you want to rake some up and dump them on top of there, they'll keep that moisture in the soil. They'll keep the bed protected if we were to get a hard rain and prevent it from bouncing those seeds all over. And it'll give them a good start.
Okay, I'll give it a try then.
Yes, sir. And you did time it well. You got really lucky on the way the rain has fallen. And it is the right time to get those poppies in. So you should have a great bloom this spring.
Okay, I'm open for that. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Good point here, folks. This is the time of the year that poppies should go in the ground. We're probably a little bit late. You know, you could have done it earlier, but if you've got poppy seeds, get those things started. Larkspur, if you're a fan of larkspur, or nigella, also known as love in a mist, this is the time of the year that you would be putting those seeds out also so that we could get that spring bloom. If you have bluebonnet seeds, you're probably late to the game, but you could still put them out. There's no loss here. We've had this nice, just barely soaked the ground. This has been good rain this week to get the moisture in the soil. This should be a good time to get some of those spring flowers out there by the seed method. Your bluebonnets would probably still make it. We got a lot of winter to go yet. We don't know what's going to happen, but they should be getting going. You should be able to walk out there right now and look at the ground and see that you have some bluebonnets already started. They should be popping up at this time of the year, and there'll be a little rosette until the year goes on, and then in the spring we get our beautiful bloom. So it is a good time to be doing those things. The weather has been very beneficial this week. That gentle, just barely get the soil damp. My veggie garden's looking fantastic. It's really loved this weather. So get out there with those seeds and get them going. This is a good thing to get into the ground. You know, another thing that you could be doing, you should have been doing, get bulbs. If you have not put bulbs in, you need to go get some. Put them in the ground. This is the time of the year that most of the bulbs that we would see in the spring and, of course, through the summer, we have summer blooming bulbs. They should be in the soil now. So there's things to do to get ready for spring. It's a good opportunity to do so. It's a good chance to make sure that you've got that beautiful spring bloom coming up. Right now, I'm still trying to pull out some weeds. This is the weather. If you haven't done the corn gluten, this is the time of the year where you will see not only the wildflowers bloom, not only your things that you're putting out like alyssum, but you will also see the weeds going crazy. Just like the temperature has to be right for certain diseases, the temperature has to be right for certain seeds. In our veggie garden, we think of carrots and spinach and lettuce. They need cooler temperatures to germinate. Well, there's also thistles. There's also henbit. There's also, if you're not wanting it, the horse herb. There's all of these weeds that will be germinating in this weather. And they may stay really small and try to stay out of your sight and hidden, and then really be nasty for you in the spring. But this is something that you will start seeing now. If you didn't get out your corn gluten as a pre-emergent, your absolute best bet, especially with the softer ground, is to take 5 minutes. Find a little spot in the ground that you're trying to take, your turf, your flower bed, whatever. Spend 5 minutes looking and seeing. If you see a plant that you don't think is supposed to be there, if it has popped up and it's like, well, that's not supposed to have anything growing there, or no, that's not grass and it's growing in the middle of my turf, grab it and yank it out. Take that 5 minutes, just gently pull it out of the ground right now. You can leave it right there. Nobody's going to complain. If you pull it out of the ground, you leave it there to die, that's fine. But you want to get to them before they start blooming. A single plant can produce anywhere between 100 and 100,000 seeds. So every time that you get ahead of them, every time you get one of them out of the ground so that one can't produce all those seeds, you're way ahead of the game. That 5 minutes effort every day to just, oh, there's a plant that I didn't want there, pull it out of the ground. That extra 5 minutes you spend will make such a huge impact in the spring. You'll have so many fewer plants to have to deal with. That means you do less labor. You have a more beautiful turf, not using nasty chemicals, take care of stuff. Take that 5 minutes. It's perfect in this weather. Soil's got just enough moisture in it to be soft. So you start pulling, those roots should come completely out of the ground for you. It'll be a well-spent 5 minutes. You'll notice it in that you won't have as big a problem in the spring. And every year that you do this, this constant battle of getting the weed before it reseeds, the better your lawn will look. It will always look so much nicer not to have those weeds in it. So take those few few moments when you are walking from the front door to the car, or you're going to go and fill your bird bath. Oops, going to go off a tangent here. There's another thing that we need to remember. If you have a bird bath, you need to keep it full. Sounds kind of strange. Cold weather, who wants to take a bath in the cold weather? Birds really need to bathe almost every day. That's why you see them have, you know, just an affinity for water. The reason for that is that when they bathe and they can loosen those feathers and preen them, allows them to separate the feathers. They don't wind up getting stuck together with either dirt or pests, even, like mites. The fluffier they can make their feathers, the more insulation it provides for them. If you've ever seen a bird all puffed up, you know, he looks like twice as big around as he really is. That's because with the clean feathers, they open up nicely and they make this really great insulation around the bird to keep them warm. So while it may seem a little counterintuitive, in freezing weather, in really cold temperatures, it is best if you can keep a bird bath out for the birds so that they can stay warm. Seems strange, staying warm by taking an icy cold bath, but that's kind of how their feathers work, so help them out there. The advantage is you shouldn't be seeing mosquitoes out there in these cold temperatures, but keep that out for the birds. Keep water out for all of the animals. They still need it. Folks, we're coming into the bottom of the hour. Paula, I see you there. If you can hang on, we will catch you after the news. This is Gardening Naturally. The number is 512-836-0590. Give me a call. Welcome back, everybody. Bill, are you still there? You finally work off all you ate on Thanksgiving?
I am still working it off, and I haven't really eaten much yet today. It seems to be carrying into day two here where I'm not too hungry.
Yeah, I figure it's going to take me about 20 years, and after, you know, that right. long, it's like, yeah, it's not worth the trouble.
20 years and 20,000 miles of walking.
So, hey, speaking of, going to be a nice enough day to go for a walk?
I think it will, yeah. So looking out there right now, dealing with some clouds, but I don't see any rain on the radar, so it should be dry. But there is a slight chance of a shower here for the next couple of hours, and then a front moves through later today. But not before we get up to 80. It's fairly warm out there right now, even a little humid. We get up to 80 today, not far from the record of 83, and then temperatures begin to drop this afternoon, and it's much chillier tonight. Down to 45, and then, yeah, tomorrow, Monday, not as warm, but still, we'll take mid-60s and partly sunny skies.
So this kind of misty stuff will be done today and not again for the rest of the week?
Yeah, I think this cold front moves through and kind of clears out the atmosphere, so we're talking about a good amount of sunshine, lower humidity, lower temperatures, but pretty much where we should be this time of year. We'll probably start to see some moisture return by the time we get to Wednesday and Thursday again, maybe a slight chance of a shower, a little misty again, but yeah, not seeing any real heavy rain events across the area, and today is the final day of hurricane season, and the tropics are quiet as well.
Oh, and we know that hurricanes can read the calendar and
That's
will
right.
not start another hurricane,
they,
right?
They know that today's the last day, so they better hurry up.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to kind of think about going for a waddle this afternoon to get rid of some of this food, so I'll see how the weather's going to be.
All right. Enjoy your waddle.
Thanks a lot, Bill.
Thank you.
Yeah, folks, we're all overstuffed for Thanksgiving. Let's go to the phone. This is Paula. Good morning, Paula. What can I help you with?
Good morning, Jeff. We really appreciate your program.
Well, thank you.
We're out here in McDade, and we put in some broccoli and cauliflower plants, I guess mid to early October, and we have beautiful, beautiful broccoli leaves and beautiful cauliflower leaves, but no broccoli or cauliflower. Is there anything we can do?
There's something you should consider here. Mm-hmm. The formation of a head for broccoli and cauliflower, even a good cabbage, can be greatly affected by high temperatures.
Ah.
So it's possible you got caught in, they were happy, they're healthy, they're growing leaves, but they got stunted by a blast of warm weather, which we still had some warm weather there.
Mm-hmm.
And it causes an effect called buttoning. If it forms a head at all, it will be a very, very small head. There's not a way to really reverse this process. It's not like once it hits it, if it would just get cold again, they'll start producing again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, broccoli and cauliflower leaves are edible. If you have the space, you can let them grow simply to harvest the leaves. They are a lot like cooked cabbage when you steam them.
Oh, okay.
But if you're looking for a head of broccoli or a good head of cauliflower,
mm-hmm.
it may be worth the effort to just go, fine, I'm going to start again. Because any effort that you make to try to get a head back on those, if it were successful, will take long enough that you'd probably be able to harvest one if you simply went with a new transplant.
Okay, I think we may go with the new transplant then.
Yeah, like I said, all of those leaves are still edible, and they can be quite tasty. But if you're looking for those heads, it's been more than 6 weeks now.
Uh-huh.
And you should be getting an indication. If you look down the center stem, you should be seeing heads start to form by now. If it isn't, the only other thing, what are you fertilizing with?
We did some Has to Grow,
mm-hmm.
and we also mulched with a nice turkey mulch earlier.
Boy, that should be enough to make sure they're not going hungry. Yeah, you okay. may have gotten hit by a blast of the heat, and it's just not going to let them finish out for you.
Is it too late to go ahead and put in some more transplants?
Not at all, and if you really wanted to, you could put in some now and some 2 weeks from now and just do every couple of weeks through maybe as far as the end of February or March.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this is our long growing season for those guys. So I would not be at all concerned about putting in more plantings of them.
Okay, well, that'll give us something to do in this great weather.
Yes, it will.
Thanks so much, Jeff.
Thanks for the call, Paula. Yeah, folks, we live in Texas in tomato land, and it affects our non-tomato time. We have to rush to get tomatoes in the ground early. We have to avoid them freezing, and we get them out there because we have this short season to really produce tomatoes. Then it gets too hot for the tomato. So we think in this one, gotta hurry, gotta hurry, gotta hurry. On the winter side of the equation, this is a much longer, consistent period of time. Our cool season plants, you can plant and plant and plant. If you think about it, we would normally be putting most of our cool season plants in. This year's been an exception, but normally as early as Labor Day. And you could keep planting and planting. Let's say we start October 1st, just for a random number. There's 90 days from October 1st to January 1st. You should be able to go January 1st to easily the end of March with still decent weather for the cool season crops. That's 6 months of growing time. In tomato land, we get maybe 2 full months in the spring and 2 full months in the summer, fall. So this is the period of time. And the crops that we're planting, we put in beets, for example, they go 60 days. So if I plant some beets every 2 weeks, holy cow, I'm going to be harvesting beets for weeks and weeks and weeks throughout this period of time. Radishes, carrots, turnips, all of the root crops for sure. Lettuce, spinach, kale. I plant those once early, and then I only harvest some of the outer leaves when I want them. A cut and come again plant. I can harvest kale for 6 months. So this is the period of time. We don't have to rush. It's not, well, I didn't plant in October, so I can't plant at all. No, I didn't plant in October, so plant in November. The worst problem you're going to find is hoping that your local independent nursery has good growers that are still growing the veggies at this time of the year. The growers have to switch out. They go back and forth between, oh, they need some flowers for this time. They need this veggie for this time. They got to get ready for spring or summer coming up. So they may not necessarily be growing broccoli or cabbage every time you want it. So look around, call around, check with your local independent nurseries and see, because Paula's going to go out there and look for broccoli and cabbage and cauliflower right now, and there should be a nursery out there that has starts for you, and it's a good time to do it. So don't, we have more patience in the winter. We have more opportunity in the cool season months to grow crops. So don't worry about the fact that, you know, that one's not looking good, I'm going to have to milk it along. No, yank it out of the ground, put another one in. Plenty of time. Plenty of time for things to start growing. And you're probably going to see onions showing up. If they haven't made it to your nursery already, you'll start seeing the onion crops coming in. We're really close to that period of time to put them in the ground. You would probably be successful if you started today. But we usually will stick onions in the ground on the lengthening side of the day. After December 21st, the days start getting longer. That's really going to be the window to get the onions in. Putting them in now, you're 3 weeks early. The onions aren't going to be that upset about it. So don't worry about it. But we will be turning to onions here shortly. So get your beds ready for that. If you haven't already done your garlic and you haven't already done your scallops, you can try them. I'm sorry, we don't plant scallops. We fish scallops. I meant shallots, which we plant shallots in the ground. Be really cool if we could plant scallops. I like scallops. They'd be tasty. But those crops, you're probably on the late side for. If you happen to be able to get a hold of some, garlic and shallots would probably still produce, not as well as they would have if you put them in the ground in October when you should have. but it doesn't mean they'd fail. So patience, we've got a big window to garden now. It's not this little, I've got 2 weeks to get stuff in or I can't plant. Nope. Lots of time to enjoy the fall garden yet. Lots of fall gardening left. We hopefully will have a reasonable winter for us so that we'll really be able to get out there and enjoy a nice long harvest and get all of those cold weather crops in because they're some of the tastiest. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. Give me a call, 512-836-0590. We're going to take a quick break. Welcome back, everybody. And, you know, I really try hard to present valid information to everybody here, even if it is only valid for winning Trivial Pursuit games or something like that. Did you know that on this day in 1954, a woman by the name of Anne Hodges was struck by a meteor? Meteorite, technically. No, seriously, only person in all of humanity to be recorded being struck by a cosmic object. It flew through her roof and hit her in the leg, and she's got a nasty bruise and scar from it, but only person ever hit by a meteorite. You have to know that karma's got something out for you when that happens to you. Let's go to the phones. Well, maybe not. Got a question there, but I don't have a caller. And his question was, can an individual make the orange oil herbicide? Yes, absolutely. David, if you're still listening, or we have a phone problem here, I'm not sure which, but yes, this is a common practice. Let me give you the ingredients list for this, okay? It can be very effective to make your own orange oil-based herbicide. So the first thing you need is you go to find what's called horticultural vinegar. Now, it usually comes in a gallon jug. And it's 20% vinegar. Regular household vinegar, white vinegar that you clean with, is only 5% vinegar. So you need to find horticultural grade. It comes in gallon jugs. You can get bigger than that. And it'll say 20% or horticultural grade vinegar. You take 1 gallon of that vinegar, and to that gallon, you add 1 cup of orange oil. So gallon of vinegar, 1 gallon of horticultural vinegar, 1 cup of orange oil, and about 1 teaspoon of a liquid soap. The vinegar will help dissolve a protective coating that exists on the leaf. It will cause the leaf to desiccate. The orange oil at that concentration will do the same thing. It is another form of a desiccant. It will help burn the leaf of the plant chemically. The soap is simply to help it spread really even over the leaves. If you've ever poured water on a cabbage leaf, you see it bead up and it doesn't go anywhere. Well, the soap will help it spread out so that the orange oil and vinegar can do their job on the leaf. So 1 gallon of horticultural vinegar, 1 cup of orange oil, 1 teaspoon of a liquid soap. And yes, you can use that blue detergent soap. The mix is really simple to use. You really shouldn't mix it up too far in advance. If I made it today and went out and sprayed some stuff and didn't use it all, and then, well, tomorrow I get up and I find I missed some weeds, it should be okay. But I wouldn't make it up a week in advance. It is non-selective. That's a real fancy word of it's going to try to kill everything you spray it on. So you can't just blanket spray your lawn. You don't want to just go crazy in your flower bed, because whatever you get it on is going to try to take that coating off the leaf. It's going to try to desiccate the plant. That's how it works. We have to remember plants are unique in the world because they can take sunshine and convert it directly to food. So if a plant has no leaves, it will starve. It will try like crazy when you take all the leaves off, when you burn them off with the horticultural herbicide here. When you burn those leaves off, it's going to try like crazy to have whatever energy it has left in its roots to make more leaves so that it can continue to live. So using this kind of spray means I come out and spray today, and I come out and check again in a week or two. I don't want to give the plant any chance to have a leaf. No leaves equals no food equals no more plant. So yes, you can make up your own. It is reasonably safe to use. You don't want to spray it on things that you want to keep. You only want to spray it on the things you're trying to get rid of. Once it's dry, if I were to spray a leaf, and once that leaf is dry, kids and pets, not a problem. They can go play. It won't smell too bad with the orange oil in it, so it won't leave you with a funk in your yard. That'll be easy to take care of. It's just that if it is a simple annual weed, you're probably going to win on one spray. If you are battling poison ivy, you are going to go out there and you're going to spray a lot for a while until you wear the plant out, till the plant quits making leaves, plant quits making food. But this will work for you. It's a safe and reasonable herbicide to control weeds, to control plants growing where you don't want. My driveway's got a couple of cracks in it. I always have to deal with the grass that comes up through it. This is something that you could use. I would take a little caution if you're using it around paved stones. It could stain them. Generally, it will lighten them up, not darken them. But always test a spot first before you just start spraying like crazy. You don't want to wind up ruining a beautiful landscape that you worked hard on because you were chasing the weeds. But you can make your own herbicide this way, and it works, and it's easy to do. Now, for what it's worth, there are companies that pre-mix that for you. Everything in one jug, ready to go. So it's just a question as to whether or not it's time-consuming to you or cost-effective to you to make it yourself versus having it pre-made. As for the weeds this time of the year, like I said, you see something that has a pretty flower on it and you didn't plant it, or it's growing somewhere where you don't want it, if you go and pull that flower head off, it will prevent it from making more weed seeds. I could go out and use this herbicide and spray the plant. I just have to be careful not to get anything on the plants that I want to keep. But that would also be an effective way to get rid of it. So it's a good time to do this. This temperature break is going to cause a lot of those plants to start germinating right now. That's their job at this time of the year. And this cool weather is going to have them going crazy. Right now, my yard is green. It has not been this green in probably literally a year because the horse herb has erupted. It has been a fantastic ground cover. I don't have any muddy spots because I have this lovely green carpet of horse herb going crazy all through my yard right now. And I'm grateful for it because it's stopping the mud from washing everything away. The rain does not cause these streams. It keeps my feet from getting all muddy when I'm walking around. So I'm grateful for this rain and the cooler temperatures. The horse herb has been beautiful right now. But I'm also seeing the thistles starting to form. So I got to take the time to go get rid of those. I don't want those. I don't want those popping up everywhere. If you haven't noticed, we spent all this time looking at the color of the leaves, and they've really been spectacular. Some of the plants have just been amazing. Go check the loquats. Mine are covered in buds right now. They should be breaking bud very, very soon. And it's a beautiful little white flower. It looks very pretty on the dark green plant of a loquat. But what's more, it has a wonderful scent to it. It's really delicate. It's kind of like a winter version of Confederate star jasmine. And it's also a great bee food. The native pollinators love it. They will be on it like crazy. So you should start seeing the bursts of loquats around town. It's very, very pretty. This is a fantastic plant for our landscape. If we're going to have a warmer than normal winter, that leaves the possibility of having a nice big loquat crop, which are so delicious. So check this plant out if you haven't seen it. If you don't have one in your yard, you should be seeing them blooming around Central Texas now. Very pretty, wonderful scent to them, classic look, and a great screening plant. So use the weather as an opportunity to kind of browse for what would look good in your landscape. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. We're coming up on the end of the first hour. I'll take a break for the news. You can give me a call. The number's 512-836-0590. We'll be back after the news.